listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to Accent On with Alona Europa and Jonathan Todd, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, LA. Welcome to another edition of Accent On. This is John Johnson coming to you live from the City of Angels, right here in the beautiful studios of LA Talk Radio. Hello. And?
Hello. Here is Ilona Europa, and I'm speaking and calling from Poland via Skype.
I know. See, people were surprised because they expected to hear an accent right off the bat when they started the show, but instead they got John Johnson, and so...
I guess having
with the Oklahoma accent.
Yeah, I got a Texas accent, and then we got Dr. DJ calling live from Dallas. Hello, DJ.
Hello, John. How are you?
I'm doing well. So
the magic of technology.
I know. We love it. So today, the show is really, truly international, isn't it? Because we got you calling in from Poland, right, Alona?
Yes, I am right now in my hometown in Gliwice, very close to Silesia, 1 hour from Krakow, and it's 3 a.m, and I had like 7 coffees,
wow.
And I'm ready to go.
Well, we're so glad we could do this with technology, but yeah, you know, it's funny because I just wonder if you're outrunning, outlasting all the paparazzi probably following you around Poland, right?
You are so sweet. No, it's not like that. I have a lot of nice people who recognize me on the street because I still, my songs are on TV, and I am here 3 times a year, and I always try to do some shows. And yes, when I am in certain part of Poland, I think I am still very known.
Yes, because I just saw some news footage on the internet of some newswoman who had captured you running across the street, and they're reporting a sighting of Ilona Europa in Poland. So I thought it was so funny that even when you go away quietly, people find you. So
yes, it's just sometimes I'm very surprised when I buy shoes or something, and people look at my face and say, "Oh my gosh, Ilonka!" They call me 2 different names because I was singing under another name in Poland when I was younger. But yeah, people remember. They remember the songs, and I'm here, like I said, more often. And hey, everything is just going very, very well.
Well, I think for our American listeners, I'm just going to brag on you for just a second, Ilona, because I think it's pretty cool. Is that what you may not know is that Ilona Europa is actually a beloved pop star in Poland. Actually, she's a pipe icon, is what I would call her, and she's also considered one of the top electronica pop stars in Europe. So when she visits her home country of Poland, she generates a lot of excitement. I'll put it that way. Ilona is very humble. You're very humble, but you're a big deal.
Yes, I am humble. Although, if you start asking me how many awards I won in my country, I can say everyone that exists here. Then I am maybe a little bit humble, but I know also that I have a lot of success here in my country, and I also finished one of the bestest music academy here and in a pop genre. And yes, I was touring with from symphony orchestra to big band to lots of rock bands, and yeah, I'm still doing my career here.
Yeah, pretty amazing. The DJ, how are you doing?
Fantastic. We had some great weather run through the Dallas area, and even made it out to the great State Fair of Texas yesterday. So having a good time out in the big Lone Star State.
So you're eating a lot of deep fried butter and deep fried Coca-Cola, I think.
We did deep fried cactus, deep fried Oreo, fried chicken, and of course the carny dog and funnel cake. You got to have those when you go to the fair.
See, when you go to the Texas State Fair, they're known for their very famous fried foods, like fried Oreos and fried. I think they fry everything, actually. So
pretty much.
Cool. Well, I'm excited today because we've got 2 other guests in the studio with me today. I have best-selling author and screenwriter George Newbery, with us today. Say hi, George.
Hello, John. Welcome to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
And
hello, George.
Hello, Alona.
I miss you.
I miss you, too. When you get back, it's going to be party time.
Uh-oh.
I will be there.
And so we have another special guest. I'm going to get tired actually reading her accomplishments, but I'm going to try. So we have a special guest who is an American TV icon. She hates it when I say that. However, she was named one of the top 100 greatest kid stars of the 20th century for television and film by VH1. She's been honored with the TV Pop Culture Award by TV Land. And this TV icon of pop culture is best known for her role as Cindy Brady on the television hit sitcom The Brady Bunch from 1969 to 1974. She was cast in the role of Cindy Brady when she was just 8 years old. And effectively, she grew up on with Americans watching her grow up on television. She's a mother. She's a radio talk show host. She's an active humanitarian. She's an advocate for children with special needs and autism. She's an advocate against animal cruelty. She's a fine artist. She's also, I'm getting tired. She also, something that I love about her, though, because, you know, I'm in the fashion industry, is that she actually designed a line of footwear with Converse that sold very well.
Yeah.
And she's also a best-selling author with her book, Love to Love You, Brady's. Please welcome to Accent On, the iconic and multi-talented, I'm tired, Susan Olson. Hi, Susan.
Thank you. Hi.
Hello, Alona.
Hi. Susan, I cannot believe that mostly we have our shows next to each other. You have in one studio, I have in my studio, Axanon, and you know, we are now separated by ocean.
Yes.
How this could be?
And it's the first time I've ever been on your show, and you went and gone to Poland.
Yeah.
But when you come back, though, you're going to do our show, right? You're going to do Two Chicks?
Yes, I always see you there, and it seems like you have a lot of fun. Then I cannot wait to join you.
Yay!
So two Chicks Talking Politics is the show that Susan does with
Sheena Metal.
Yes. It's really a great show. So, yeah, Cindy Brady grew up into this, really amazing political savvy woman.
Thank you.
Yeah. I was reading through a bunch of her accomplishments as well, John, and quite amazed that she didn't stop just at being Cindy Brady. She's gone on to all sorts of other ventures and been successful, it looks like, at every single one of them.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah. You're really kind. I just, as my mother always said, you're jack of all trades, master of none. Why won't you settle down on one thing? But I just couldn't.
But if you're successful, why not do just about everything?
That's right.
Well, it's difficult because you go through your highs and your lows, and there's been a lot of lean times too. Right. But I don't know how to do it any other way.
So really you're kind of like what I do, which is I've done everything from I've been a paramedic, I've worked for Oprah Winfrey, I've worked Steven Spielberg, film and television.
Well, that's really a diversity right there. Paramedic and entertainment.
Yeah, can upstage us here. I am a little bit jealous, John, but you know what? We have you on Accent On. And I really, really believe that's the biggest accomplishment for me to have you on my show.
Well, thank
and
you.
I'm so proud that you are here with us. Susan,
yes.
I want to know how, when you wake up, how is your day? Because you have so many things going on that I cannot even imagine. What time you are waking up?
Well, I usually wake up in time to begin the long process of getting my son awake for school. And that takes quite a while. I wake him up, he says, okay, Mom, and then he goes right back to sleep, and I go downstairs, and I clean the litter boxes, and then I go back upstairs, and I ask my son, please get up, he says, okay, Mom, and he goes back to sleep, and I go downstairs and make breakfast. Anyway, after about, you know, 5 trips up there, he finally gets up, and he heads off to school.
Oh, shoot, he sounds like me, too. He's hates to go to bed at night, and hates to get up in the morning, right?
Right, yeah. Exactly.
Well, you know how my daddy...
Sorry, Alona.
Go ahead, DJ.
Yes, you can continue.
Hey, So, Susan, you know, John had mentioned you have a special needs son with autism. Can you tell us a little bit more about the challenges that you face in that situation?
Yeah, it's interesting because it's so very, 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 very subtle. And most people would not, they really wouldn't come away. Well, I mean, Alana, you know, Michael, you would not come away thinking that he was handicapped. You might come away going, he's very unusual. And for the most part, he has Asperger's syndrome. So in some ways, I think it affords him more of an artistic, not just autistic, but artistic point of view. And but the difficulties that it presents often just look like he's a cranky guy. And but it's a crankiness that is really, really difficult for him to rise above.
Were you able to, was he diagnosed early or did it happen?
Yeah, pretty early. And you know, it was weird because, I marched to the beat of a different drummer. And my first feelings for him right when he came out of the womb was, I just thought he was handling being born so well. And my first feelings for him were respect. And I clearly saw this is not a blank slate. This is a person who I get to raise, but he's not me, and he's not an extension of me. But so, I mean, he was really weird. And I liked that. And I thought, oh, this is great. He's cool. And then I started noticing some of the oddness was not working for him. And particularly in the way that he would tantrum and have difficulty regulating his emotions. So we got him diagnosed.
So what,
too.
2 years old? Wow.
I'm sorry. How old was he when he was diagnosed?
Okay, the official diagnosis really didn't come. I'm sorry. I really misspoke there. The official diagnosis came at the age of 4. It was after he was in preschool that we decided, okay, this is something we need to look into. But the first time anybody suggested a possibility of autism was when he was 2.
Yeah. That's some.
Okay, Susan, I think I need to say something. I met your son, I think, 5 months ago. Every Monday, he is in a studio with you, and he's waiting in the hall, waiting until mommy will finish the radio show. And I was, for first, like, I think, few Mondays, I was just watching this beautiful boy with unusual hair, mostly blonde with pink colors and clothing that I think I could find in a German stores, in a boutiques. And I was just like typical Ilona. I am sometimes too forward to the people. And I just ran to him like, oh my gosh, I just love how you look. You're so cool. He just looked at me like, what do you want from me, woman? But you know, I am like, I didn't care. I was just so amazed by how he was put together from his hair to his pants to his unusual shirts. There were all layers. He is a beautiful boy with amazing blue eyes. And for the first 2 weeks or 2 Mondays or 3 Mondays, we didn't have a lot of conversation. But I can tell you, I know you probably have some deeper issues or problems or he's a little different. But I seen him a little bit a genius because his vision of how he perceives himself separates him apart from masses that are walking on the street. And to me, he's like little icon of what the underground of young people can look like. And he puts all of this thing.
True, she called me. She goes, you're going to love her son, Michael, because you're all about fashion. You're everything fashion. And this kid knows how to dress. She goes, wait till you see him. And I saw him a little bit ago, and I got to meet Michael. And his hair's really cool. And he's wearing all black today, all kind of color coordinated.
His creations are in the wash right now. He's kind of normal today. But Ilona, you totally get him, and he adores you. And that's him. I mean, and he'll sit down, he'll tell you. In many ways, one of his difficulties is that he's kind of spiritually older than his peers. And yes. Very different and defiantly does not want to be like everybody else.
You know, you said he... Because when I met him, he does kind of feel like an old soul to me.
Very much, yeah.
He acts very mature. Mm-hmm. But it was funny, Alana, because when I said I was doing the show today, because you were out of the studio, he goes, oh, she's not here. Like, he was looking for you. So,
yeah.
Yeah, he loves you. You know, I really want to also say that we all can see your son creations on Accent on page on the Facebook, because yes. I have few pictures with him. He created a really cool jacket for me with
that,
my name on it, and I am wearing this jacket. And every time when I have a guest who has something to do with clothing or just modern way of you know, put clothes on the young people, I always will make him to meet them. And one day somebody will say, oh, this boy can create some unusual line for young, you know, people, or younger, 17, 15. He is really, and he's a musician also. Yes, I know he likes to play.
Yes.
Oh, what does he play?
He's very artistic. He plays guitar.
Wow.
What he wants to get a keyboard, mm-hmm. and what he really wants to do is create the ambient music in video games.
Sure.
So to create the atmospheres and the background music. I think is cool.
That is cool. I guess I didn't think that was I didn't think about that as a role, but I guess that's a job, right? That's
yeah. Well, I like that he's very intrigued by movie music and always has been. So he likes things that set a mood and a setting, and I think he'd be very good at it.
Which is interesting, I think, because if you think about autism in general, right? It's about, you know, they don't really show emotion. A lot of children don't have a hard time with emotion and connecting. And
Well, you'll find that actually, in many ways, it's kind of like what we learned about Mr. Spock in Star Trek. Was not that he didn't have emotions, but that the Vulcans feel their emotions so deeply that it's very difficult for them to express them, and they've created a culture where they can't express them.
Uh-huh.
So in some ways, I think certainly with Aspie's, which is the nickname for Asperger's syndrome, that tends to be the case. Yeah. Autism is a little more more classic, more straightforward. Asperger's syndrome is quirky, and it presents totally differently in most everybody. And rumor has it, you know, as far as being able to be successful with it, most people agree that Bill Gates has Asperger's syndrome.
Yes.
Yeah. Interesting.
You know,
yes.
Actually, there are several people, and just to give got to interject a little bit of the medical background just for those listening. You know, autism is actually, we've come to understand, more of a spectrum, as you're, I'm sure, well aware, Susan.
Yeah.
And Asperger's is on the more, on kind of the lower end of the autism spectrum, and not what people would classically think of as autistic children, or adults for that matter. And there are actually several, you know, you brought up the point of Bill Gates possibly being autistic. There are actually several folks with Asperger's syndrome that have come out and said it. In fact, in 2002, there was a Nobel Prize winner in the U.S., Vernon Smith, who won the prize in economics, who has Asperger's syndrome and was very successful doing it. And part of, I think, what people have come to think of with it, and which is very interesting when you're talking about your son, is usually the folks with Asperger's are very detail-oriented and mathematically oriented and not as much in touch with music or the arts or those kinds of things. So it's very interesting hearing you talk about your son and his interest in music and in the arts.
Yeah, also we know that Susan is all about what her son is. She's creative. She's, I think you like a you are a singer also, yes?
No,
you were singing,
when you were young. No, I play guitar, but I people have requested that I not sing.
Oh.
Okay.
I'm not very good at singing.
But we saw you singing on the Brady Bunch show. And,
then you should know.
Oh, I'm disappointed.
That's funny. That's very funny.
But
anyway, Susan, I would like to know more about you. You know, we know so much about you from how we perceive you. But really, can you explain us who is Susan?
Who's Susan Olson?
Well, I was going to say my son didn't have a chance at exploring his mathematical scientific side because he's being raised by me. He had to be an artist.
Oh.
Or I'd beat him severe. No, I'm kidding.
Is math like a foreign subject?
To
you?
Actually, I'm good at math too.
But that's what I thought.
I tend to lean towards creative endeavors, and I think that just, you know, when the minute Michael showed any interest in anything creative, any art, you know, I immediately stuck a pencil in his hand and encouraged that. And my gosh, when he was little, now he can't do it now. He didn't really keep it up. The thing is, he only does something as long as he's interested in it. But he got into The Simpsons, and he started drawing The Simpsons, like verbatim, exactly.
Very talented.
Like the characters.
Artist.
Yeah.
Wow. Like his mother.
Well, I mean, way better than me. Because I'm a very labored artist. It's not real facile and natural for me.
So when you paint, when you do fine art, for you, it's a struggle. And
it is, yeah.
Well, So we're gonna actually. This is a great. We're gonna get to know you a little bit better, and we're gonna play a game.
Okay.
Ready? It's called Getting to Know Susan Olson. So we're gonna ask you a few questions and see
sure.
how you answer. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay. Number one, I will always make time for
food.
For food. What kind of food? And what kind
what
of food?
What kind of food?
Yeah. That's just
fried food. The Great State Fair is going on. Come on down for some fried food.
Okay.
And I hear they have wonderful funnel cakes.
Oh, absolutely. You got to have the Fleischer's Corny Dog and the funnel cake.
Oh. So
I will always make time for coffee.
Uh-huh.
And you, John?
For me, Diet Dr. Pepper.
Okay. And what about Dr. DJ?
If it's just I will always make time for family and friends, but if we're talking food, gumbo.
Gumbo. Oh.
Gumbo.
Because Dr. DJ's from New Orleans, right? You're from Louisiana?
Lafayette. South Louisiana.
Yeah, cool. So, Susan, number two, your favorite Saturday pastime is?
Oh, gosh.
Favorite Saturday pastime?
It depends on what I really like to do or what I usually do.
What would you like to do? I stumped Susan Olson.
Okay, go off and visit friends in a yeah. fun setting.
Cool. Susan, you tell me one thing you would like to do earlier. And I might add that I knew Susan years and years and years ago. When we went to the Motion Picture Mothers Club for years and years.
Now, explain what the Motion Picture Mothers Club is, short for the listeners.
The Motion Picture Mothers Club is a club formed of mothers of stars. And how long has it been going? Probably 50 years at least.
Oh, way longer
than
gosh,
that.
My mom joined it, I think, in the 40s or the late 30s.
Because when you and I were going there all the time, it was the 70s and 80s. Is when
yeah.
I was
so who was part of that? Who was part of that group, George?
Oh, was Jenna Rowland, Cesar
yes,
Romero,
Mary
Sybil
Ellen,
Brand, Lois Nettleton was always there. Alvy Moore.
Oh. And Susan, you were talking about, who was the actor you were talking about, the fava beans actor?
Oh, yeah, Sir Anthony Hopkins.
Yeah.
His mother was a member of the club. Yeah. Bruce Willis's mother, Marlena, was just a hoot. In the last years of my mother's life, I would go to luncheons with her, and Marlena and I would always kind of hook up. And
wow.
She had the same sense of humor. We got along really well.
And Peter Marshall.
Peter
Marshall and Fred McMurray.
Yes.
June Haber.
Cesar Romero, I remember him very well when I was little. So, I mean, really, there was a huge age
did you
era
know, did you know who Cesar Romero
people.
Was when you were little?
Yes,
was,
I did, yeah.
He wasn't the Joker.
He was the Joker.
Mm-hmm.
I knew
That's
Cesar
right.
very well. He was a wonderful man.
He was yeah. also a very handsome young man in a Shirley Temple movie.
Yes, he started out in music, if I remember right.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
So you also love old movies, the old movie classic?
Yeah, I sure do, because I watched a lot of them. My mother was 42 when she had me.
Yeah.
So,
Well, it's interesting about you, Susan, because I think about all the different things you've done before. See, people know you for the Brady Bunch. That's really iconic pop culture for you. But you were in Gunsmoke.
Yes,
you're in Gunsmoke.
Yes.
And Ironsides, I think
mm-hmm.
you've been in Ironsides.
Yeah.
So you were sort of a seasoned actress before you got to the Brady Bunch, actually, at the big age of 8 years old.
Yeah, well, you know, that was one of the things that I wanted to show, and I produced a special called Brady Bunch Home Movies. And unfortunately, it was before they did the E! True Hollywood Story, which is really more the flavor that I wanted around the special. It ended up being kind of cute and schmarmy. But I certainly didn't want any scandal to it, but I wanted it to be serious. And one of the things I wanted to show was most of us had already done other roles and other parts. And like, there's an adorable episode of Bewitched that Maureen McCormick, who played Marcia, she did. In fact, there was a movie that Eve Plum did where she's a little girl and she walks into a house where a murder has taken place.
Wow.
And you know, there's a bloody kitchen, and I used to love that movie.
Oh, yes. Eve Plum, when she left the Brady Bunch, she went on to do some pretty heavy, serious roles that were very like go to prison kind of women roles, and she really tried to step outside, I think, of that the goody two.
Yeah, well, I think we all wanted to, and she got the opportunity with Dawn, Portrait of a Teenage Runaway.
That was a great movie.
Yeah, that we all had hopes. She had hopes that would launch her career in another direction. And so that's why she's been hesitant to do Brady-related projects.
Right.
But we still love her. She's still a sister, so we're all still very close. But I totally understand why she doesn't really want to associate herself.
I think it's interesting about TV and when you become iconic and known for a certain role, sometimes that has some good things and it has some bad things to it, right?
Yeah.
The good things is the fact that you're known, and it gives you a soapbox to be able to talk about things that are important to you as a person. But it also sort of can limit you in roles that you can go after in the future, whether people can see you in a different role. So do you feel like that kind of typecasted you a little bit for a
tremendously.
While?
Oh, tremendously. Yeah, absolutely. I think that for most people in the kind of roles that we had, if you do get typecast in a TV show these days, hopefully you've made enough money at it that it really doesn't, financially it doesn't matter, although creatively people always want to break away.
The same with the music and the songwriters or singers. When you are discovering one genre, it's so hard to move to another one because public doesn't want to really accept you in different ways. They want to perceive you what they fall in love with. And, you know, it's hard to stay all life with the same one or two or five songs style.
Well, and I think that that is true even more of the industry than it is of the public. I think the public is more willing to give somebody that they love a chance at being something different, and it's the industry that says, no, you do this, and you must always do this.
I remember
poor Donny Osmond released a song without his name on it just to see if he could get airplay, and he did, and he's like, I could never have gotten that airplay with my name on it.
Interesting. I think you're right. I think that sometimes this industry, the entertainment industry, doesn't give the public enough credit to see past
the role. Oh, they don't. They love to say, well, we need to dumb this down for the public. No, they don't. They have to dumb it down for themselves.
Right.
The public's way smarter.
I agree. So I don't know.
Yeah, it's less risky.
Yeah, so Lana, you've crossed over, though. You've done pop and electronica, and I can see you doing country. I have to be honest. Like, I don't know if I can see you doing a country song.
Oh, John, I will shock you one day. I wrote two country songs, and I even, a few years ago, I sent to Nashville for a big competition, and they sent me big letters saying that I am 4+ on a 5th. And you know what they liked a lot? Also my lyrics, which I was so happy about that because I am obviously not English speaking person. But I don't know. I do everything, you know. And you're right. Transition from one style to another is easier with the age because you stop caring really what people or industry says. You just think, I woke up today, I feel sad. Let's do sad song. Another day you meet somebody and you take a chance on, a creativity that came with, this moment of meeting some another person. I think, older I am, I just more care what makes me happy. And I don't premeditate what maybe somebody will see good in me when I just write something. Then maybe, I don't know.
Amen. I love that. That's the good thing about getting older.
It is. I do.
One thing that I've noticed, Alana, is when someone with an accent sings, they lose their accent. Most people don't sing with an accent.
I still have one, and I think I will never, ever lose it. Lose this accent. I will lose it, maybe, but I'm not an accent.
I mean, in speaking, but a lot of times when they sing, you don't hear their accent when they sing with a lot of people.
Yeah, I'll bet you could even get a little country accent with your country song.
Could.
Yes.
I could sing backup with you, maybe.
I can hear you singing country.
I could, too. You can do anything you want to do. You're magical. Right.
That is true, Alana. Alana, there's so many sides to you. I'm always fascinated by what your next passion is, because whatever you do it well, and I respect that so much, because I really believe that. I think as you get older, when you stop caring what people think and you start following your passions, what happens is that you learn excellence, and I think people today, everybody is looking for excellence, right? And when you're excellent at one thing or another, people notice it, right? And really, to be excellent at anything, it just takes to be just a little bit extra effort, right?
Mm-hmm.
To go the extra mile. And I think that whatever you do, Alana, you do it with grace and a lot of excellence.
Alana, you can sing my favorite country western song. My wife ran off with my best friend, and I still miss him.
Thank you, guys. Okay, Susan, I think we have some few questions for you. John, you just stop asking this question like favorite Saturday pastime. We got an answer. Then you ask, right now I am reading what, Susan? What are you reading right now?
Oh, right now I'm reading a book about Anne and Nancy Wilson of Heart.
Oh, I love them.
Yeah,
they're my favorite.
Too.
They're favorite.
I grew up with them, and I'm also reading an Alan Watts book.
Yeah.
But the Anne and Nancy thing, my cousin and I, we loved Heart, and we always felt like they were family.
Yeah.
And I have a friend who's actually in the band, and I hear nothing but wonderful things.
Well, you know
about
what's funny
girls.
Is that you and I have something in common. I just love how this world is like. There's no longer the 6 degrees of separation. It's more like 2 or 3.
Yeah, really.
Is my good friend Ann Wilson, who is in Nashville.
Yes.
She is their agent. She rips them.
Oh, really?
And I was talking to Ann about something about Heart, and she thought I was talking about her group. And I was talking about something. She said, "No, my the singer's Heart." And I go, "I love them." Like so. So what do you like about is it their music that you like? What is it that you really just drawn to them?
Well, I was hesitant at first. I was intrigued because they were women in rock. And at the time, way back when I was very young, I wanted to be in a band. But I wanted to be a guitar player and not sing. I wanted to not do anything traditionally female.
Right.
And so just the fact that Nancy had a guitar was interesting to me. And then just their songwriting is fantastic.
Yeah, songs like All I Want to Do Is Make Love to You, that's a great hit from Heart, right?
Oh. Yeah. They really have had 2 or 3 careers, because right when they thought that things were kind of going south for them, then boom, they got new resurgence. And it's really nice to read the book and know that people can ebb and flow and come back up. And poor Anne, I mean, my gosh, when she was very young, she was just the fat girl at school that people teased.
And now they're icons, right? Iconic.
I have to say, because I saw them not too long ago, I have a friend who plays keyboards in the band, and Anne's voice has not gotten any weaker with age. It has truly gotten stronger.
Because she can belt out some pretty...
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, big numbers.
It's amazing. Just amazing.
Well, George is a composer, too. George writes and composes music.
I just sent Anne a song that I wrote about 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Did she love it?
Matter of fact, you spoke to her right before I sent it to her.
So, nice.
Well, I have no talent in songwriting or anything, so I'm just pretty. So.
But your fireflies are just amazing. You are writing the song every time when you're speaking your thoughts out. Then I really, really think you are a beautiful composer and a lyricist also. Oh,
well, maybe you should start singing my firefly segments instead of me reading them. You should start singing.
You know what? You will be surprised. Maybe one day we'll just do it. Take a few great lines and we'll create beautiful, we call this hook or chorus, because some of them are really very, very strong lines and they could be used in a song. Now you gave me a great idea. Yeah. I will challenge you for that.
All right. Yeah. Well, I have to say, Alana, one of the things that I do like about your music is you do write great hooks into your songs. I mean, that's your song, Easy Come, Easy Go. Every time I play that song for anyone, they cannot get that song out of their head. I love that song.
I don't know. Obviously, you cannot learn this, but this comes from you sometimes so naturally. And I found out the faster I write, better hooks I write. And that's the way how I'm writing. I don't really make this process too painful for me. Okay, I have one more question for Susan. Last thing you bought, what?
Last thing I bought?
Yeah.
Oh. That would be a diet Pepsi.
Okay, book. No. I hope you bought something. What did you buy last time?
The last fun thing I bought was a laptop.
I think it's a Louis Vuitton purse, but the handbag.
No, that was actually a gift. To be honest with you, I would not spend the money on it.
So I used to work with Louis Vuitton. So she walks into the studio and she's carrying this killer, beautiful Louis Vuitton handbag. So.
Yeah, anyway. I used to work in fashion as a textile designer. I'm not a very fashionable person. My son is the
he
one
got the
flair
fashion
for
gene.
Fashion. Yeah,
yeah,
and
everything.
If this hadn't been a gift, I really don't think I would have gone out
but
and got Louis Vuitton.
But you say that though. But you designed a line of footwear for Converse.
Yeah, I designed for Guess jeans and.
I think that would surprise a lot of people who didn't know that. Like I didn't know that until I'd read that somewhere about the Converse best-selling shoe that you had designed. What was unique about that shoe?
It was the concept of it. It was just glow in the dark. I'd started out. I'd made them for myself, and they were glow in the dark animal markings, and I think that they would still work. I would love to get back in touch with Converse and say, hey, let's make them again.
Well,
and the whole idea was I wanted to get them on the feet of rock stars.
Right.
So that you could walk on stage and people would see you before the lights went up.
Oh, that's cool.
Oh, that's very easy. You just create one pair of pairs or two or three and we'll pass them around. And I'm sure some of artists will just love to be on the stage with them.
We were in the process of doing. This is back in 1984, and right when we said, okay, we need some more samples, we're going to start sending these out to people, Converse decided that they were too expensive to make.
Oh.
Okay.
So, well, you know, Converse, but you know, there's other big footwear companies out there, and we work with all of them. So.
Okay.
We do. So,
Dear John, yes, we have our Dr. DJ with us, and I think time's run very fast.
I think DJ has a surprise for Susan. What are we doing today, DJ?
Well, this afternoon, since we were talking about children earlier in the segment, I thought we'd do some medical myths that would kind of pertain to kids.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
Oh, I hope, Susan, we will win all of these questions. I always think like I need to win them. We both are mommies. I am mother of two daughters. And I think, Dr. DJ, I hope this time I will get all of them right. May I read first?
Absolutely. Go ahead.
Okay. You always need antibiotics for an ear infection. What do you think, Susan?
I would say to say always regarding antibiotics is wrong. Because we overuse them.
Okay, I will say, give it to child and let's get rid of this infection fast. What do you think, John?
Not having any children other than fur babies, two cats, I think giving antibiotics too frequently probably can cause resistance. So I I think the answer is no, not always.
We'll actually have to give the studio one, and I'm sorry, Alona, but actually you shouldn't give antibiotics for the most part. Only in extreme cases where the children have an extended fever, extreme pain, or it is lasting for more than about a week do you even need antibiotics. Most of the time, and the studies actually come from Europe, the infection will actually take care of itself, no problem.
Wow. Mm. But this is so painful. Children scream. The ear infection is just so painful, I think. But you know better, doctor. You always know better.
You know, unfortunately, even if you give them antibiotics, sometimes it doesn't take away the pain for a while. So it often just makes the parents feel better than actually helping the child.
Yeah. Okay, we have another one, another childhood myth. Teething causes a fever. I'm just afraid to even say what I think.
Alona, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Alona, I love your accent, but sometimes I have a hard time understanding what you just said. What did you just say?
What did I say?
She said teething.
Oh, you said teething. I thought you said teasing. I go, teasing the baby? Like, what were we doing? Okay. Teething.
Okay. It, you tell me in English. Teething.
Teething. Got it.
Okay. Teething causes a fever or not? What do you think, Susan?
It sure seems to. Their little cheeks get red. I don't recall if they truly run a fever, but I'm going to say, yeah, they do.
Oh, my gosh. I'm a bad mama. I think teething causes fever. What do you think, Dr. DJ?
And the answer is no, actually it doesn't.
No, they just look like it, huh?
If the kids actually do have a true fever, then they need to be seen by the pediatrician because it shouldn't be causing a fever.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
The only thing it really causes is screaming.
Now that, it absolutely does. I can attest to it personally.
Now, DJ, your daughter, she's not teething yet, is she?
She already has two teeth.
How old is your daughter? You just had her, like
5 months.
Wow.
And it's almost Christmas.
The two lower teeth, yes.
Yeah.
Two tiny, little cute teeth. I love this.
That. I love the little baby lower teeth.
Oh my gosh.
They're the cutest. Oh, now I have a little less pretty, like a visual. A green or yellow runny nose means that your child has a sinus infection and needs antibiotics. I just don't want to answer this myth anymore because I know nothing anymore. I think yes, if it's yellow and running, and I think sinus infection and needs antibiotics. What do you think, Susan?
Well, I think that definitely means there's an infection if there's green or yellow stuff. But I'm not so sure about antibiotics. I think that's Shoot. Wait a minute. Infection. Oh darn. I don't. Viruses don't get helped by antibiotics, but do infections? Yes, they do. Okay, I'm gonna say yes.
Boy. I'm sweating bullets here. I have no idea.
Actually, the green or yellow usually does mean you have an infection of some sort going on, but it doesn't give you an idea as to the cause. And Susan, you mentioned it could be viral, usually is viral, sometimes could be bacterial, and it's only the bacterial infections that will respond to the antibiotics. So even though it may mean that you have a sinus infection, doesn't necessarily mean that you need antibiotics.
Oh, gosh, then my poor child, never was sick, then I still feel not guilty by giving her too much of antibiotics, but I really think if she will be having this green and stuff coming out, I'll run to the doctor and beg for antibiotics. Okay.
I'm telling you guys right now, if I had a kid, I'd be a nervous wreck because I wouldn't know what to do with that thing.
Okay, and that, I love this one. You should not feed children peanuts until they can spell peanuts.
I agree.
If they can.
I agree, because peanuts are one of the deadliest food allergies there are. So until they can spell peanut, maybe they can't give you the signs of, hey, mom, my larynx is closing up.
Yeah.
Wow. But, you know, how can you know that? You always will give them first time, like peanut butter. And that's what scares me, because always is the first time. And then how we can predict if they will get problem with that or not?
So you wait until they're old enough.
Yeah, you wait until they're old enough.
I think
I read somewhere where peanut allergies are actually on the rise in this country. I was actually on a flight, and I fly all over the world, and this is the first time I've ever had a flight attendant announce that on this flight they were not serving any peanuts, and they were asking if you had anything with peanuts in it that you did not open it on the plane. Because someone had a severe allergic reaction to peanuts, and they didn't want any kind of peanut dust in the air. So I think there's something to that about peanuts.
Yeah, as a child.
Actually, you know, you bring up a good point there, John. There is some interesting evidence on the peanut allergies. The answer to the question is, don't feed your child peanuts until they can actually spell peanuts. And it's more of a choking hazard than actually the allergy question. I can't tell you how many times when I was in residency that we had children come into the emergency room that had swallowed peanuts and it ended up in the airway in their lungs that we had to go and fish them out. So they can be very dangerous because they weren't able to actually chew them. They didn't have all of their teeth to actually chew them and swallow them appropriately. In terms of the allergies, though, you're right. The peanut allergies are on the rise, and some people can have significant anaphylactic reactions to small amounts of peanut allergen. In fact, a small amount of dust that they may come into contact with can set off a severe allergic reaction. But the work on allergies in children seems to indicate that exposing them to small amounts of peanut, like peanut butter, over an extended period of time while they're young, actually can decrease their susceptibility to the allergen. But they aren't extremely large studies, and definitely for the whole peanuts, it's safe to stay away from them until they're a bit older.
Well, I don't think me and Susan thought anything about choking, did we, Susan?
No, I didn't.
No, mm-mm. We didn't go there.
I would have, though, if I was handing it to a child, because everything I gave to my son, I figured he was going to choke to death on it.
Right.
I was a neurotic mother.
We have last myth. Mothers who are breastfeeding should not eat garlic. No, I'm not supposed to eat garlic when I breastfeed, because I think create the gas in the baby's stomach. Or is this myth? What do you think, Susan?
I think this is so weird, because I was thinking of this today. And
what?
I was thinking, if you have an Italian baby, maybe they would like it.
Oh.
Because it does flavor the milk. I was always told,
you think it flavors the milk?
Well. That's what I was told. I would say, no, you don't. You don't. I don't know. But garlic's so healthy for you.
Yeah, doesn't garlic, prevent certain diseases, I think?
No, garlic is good for the cardiovascular system, for the heart and the blood vessels. But actually, Susan, you bring up a very good point, and the answer is there was actually a study done several years ago with mothers who were breastfeeding, and they had some of the mothers eat garlic, some of them not, and had official smell testers of the breast milk to determine if it had a garlic odor to it. And the infants who were nursing on the mothers who had taken the garlic actually nursed more than the infants who were nursing on the mothers who did not have the garlic.
Oh.
So having garlic while breastfeeding is actually beneficial.
Wow.
Oh, okay. No more cheese for me.
Well.
I know nothing about childbearing. That's not.
And you raised two kids.
I fail.
Well, I got to tell you guys, this has actually been a wonderful show. Susan, I just am so grateful to have you on the show. And
it was fun.
Any last words, Alana, from Poland? You want to share with the group?
Okay. I just miss you all. I love my country. I love two of my countries. And I would love to just maybe sing something in Polish for everybody. I have this one song. Okay. First, the Polish language is very unusual. I think that maybe we can listen to one of my songs, which title is Nic nie zmieni mej miłości. And in English, this would be Nothing's Gonna Change My Love. For you, for all of you.
Thank you, Alana.
Same
right.
here.
Thank
All
you, Alana.
Thanks, thanks, Susan. Thank you, George. Thanks, DJ.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank
Alana, Alana, sing us out. Sing us out.
Sent On with Alona Europa and Jonathan Todd, right here on LA Talk Radio.